In that light, one would then, just before we start, just bring it to the attention of the department that we would obviously expect your cooperation on this regard. As you all know that after this kind of an exercise, the provinces must receive, mandates must be seek, and therefore come back to finalize the processes and so forth. Now, in the absence of anybody from the Bobo, we will then expect the cooperation of the department where necessary, that the department should avail itself to go and brief the legislature of Limpopo on the kind of briefing that we have had today, so that we don't therefore leave any province out of the entire process. Therefore, on the basis of that, I don't know if we have any apologies for you on that. Can I just check if there's anybody from Fauquier? Because I've been largely informed that okay, thank you very much for that. No. Now I can see that provinces are really taking great interest in the business of the NCOP, which is quite interesting. So this is your house in any case where you need to express that interest. Therefore, without belabeling the matters before us and taking note that we've already lost 20 minutes of our time due to logistical arrangements. I would not introduce members, but rather say that even officials from the department, whoever is going to be taking leadership in terms of the presentation, and of course, with members and officials, as we'll be engaging, you'll then be able to have an opportunity of introducing yourself in order for us to subject that. Can I therefore give it over to you? I don't know who should I look at now, but the leader will volunteer. Thank you.
Just before we could proceed, just to extend an apology, the DG was on his way, the DG of Housing was on his way here, but he had some urgent business to attend to Victoria with Minister. So I think we've got to have a contact policy.
Thank you, Chair. Also, thank you, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Member. As you can recall, the department can appear before the committee around the terminal this month, and I hope and trust that today the honorable members are satisfied and happy with the overall attendance. Because the honorable members can see yesterday I'm surrounded by highly competent team. Honorable members, as you can recall, I made available actually copies of the presentation from the department on our last appearance, and the rationale for that was to take through the honorable members through the rationale behind the amendment of the act itself. And also, to try, to clarify, to give the members an address about the essence of the amendment. But today, what I'll try, to do, I'll be very short and precise, and also, took the members through the copy of the reprint of the bill, which is 36B. And also, I'll only take the members through the changes or the amendments that's been proposed by the portfolio committee. As the honorable members can recall that we did actually appear before the portfolio committee and approved certain amendments and changes were endorsed by that house. And a more especially, I'll have to refer the honorable members to page 5 of the bill, which is clause number 8, where the members of the portfolio committee have suggested some few changes to clarify. This is done in order to keep them, the honorable members addressed and also to clarify them in terms of the proposed amendment that's proposed by the portfolio committee there. As honorable members can never look at page 5, clause 8, that will be number B.
Let me check.
That's your 6B.
The reference?
Yes. That will be on page 5, clause 8B. Where the honorable members of the portfolio committee suggested to say B is raised by the substitution of subsection 2 of the following subsection. Subject to subsection 3 and 4 and 5, it will read as that the council may, whereabouts the honorable members then actually suggested that we should actually believe that if money is not available or is expected not to be available for that people due to future demands of the fund. The rationale for that change is actually as put forth actually by the honorable members of the portfolio committee. So they said that they should not expect that the council, should not let anything not to have money actually to fulfill its obligations. So it was agreed, in principle then, and also it was agreed and endorsed by the portfolio committee that if money is not available, it will be deleted because of the act. Then the subsection will read that subject to subsection 3, 4, and 5, the council may, and then it goes straight to A, subject to subsection 7, 2, and E. Those are the only changes that were proposed by the portfolio committee then. And also, if you can have a look at subsection B of it, in exceptional circumstances prescribed by the council. In the previous emission of bill, in exceptional circumstances prescribed by the council, was not included, but it was suggested by the member of the portfolio committee to include prescribed by the council. And also, I'd like to note to refer to the honorable member to page 6 of the bill, that will be on for that.
I'm getting worried, and if I don't do that, these members will blame me. For one simple reason, I understand the rationale or the premise that you're moving from. But the issue is that we've got special delegates that come from province who do not even have the benefit of the briefing that you gave to the select committee as it relates to the objectives, what this whole thing is all about, what is it that we want to achieve, and so forth, before we get to those technical areas within the bill itself. So that everybody must then be able to move. And also taking into account that some provinces will have to agree by the so I would just appeal that maybe even before we go into the real technical aspect of the deal, let's just look at the political rationale behind it. What is it that we want to achieve? How do we seek to achieve that and so forth? And then get now to the real issue.
Okay, thank you.
I hope I'm in order with that.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Member. Basically, I'd like to thank the Honorable Member, because, you know, with regard to the background and the rationale, you know, for the proposal in the amendment to the bill. Basically, I'll say that the bill seeks to rectify certain interpretation and implementation problems and counters the promulgation of the Housing Consumer Protection Act. And also, we'll recall that the object of the bill addresses the issue of the so-called owner builder and verify the application of the Act with regard to this category of builders. Owner builders are persons who build homes for occupation by themselves, as such do not so necessarily need protection against the same workmanship by the builder. Allowance is also made for the late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment of houses, such being houses involved with the National Home Builders Registration Council, after construction has already started, as again the desire persisted that houses must be enrolled with the council prior to the commencement of the construction. That is the...
Maybe they need taking up with this. You know, the agenda is very far.
Okay.
And I want to understand. That's why I'm not ashamed to say
okay.
Too far.
Okay.
You know, we really want to take up with this.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Member. The object of the bill, remember, the bill addresses the issue of the so-called owner-builder and clarify applications of the Act with regard to this category of builder. Owner-builders are persons who build homes for occupation by themselves and as such do not necessarily need protection against the shared workmanship by the builder. Furthermore, members, allowance is made for the late enrollment and non-detect late enrollment of houses, such being houses enrolled with the National Home Builders Registration Council, after such construction has already started, and against the desire prerequisite that houses must be enrolled with the council prior to the enrollment of the construction. That is one of the prerequisites. To say that, you know, the construction which has already started against the desire prerequisite that the houses must be enrolled with the council prior to the commencement of the construction. Although these issues have in the past been dealt with in the regulation, they are not defined precisely as we say in the Act, nor does the Act certain specify provisions that actually relate to them. The bill provides for insertion of definitions, the late enrollment, and non-deferred late enrollment, and makes specific provisions thereafter in clause 14, A of the bill. Honorable members, definition for national codes and PhD projects have also been inserted as they are contained in substantive provision proposed also in the bill. Honorable members, if you can ever look at section 7 of the Act, deals with measures that the council and the minister may prescribe. Between amendments to measures pertaining to the non-deferred late enrollment and the and late enrollment fees. You know, to be very sort of precise with regard to that, but the fair number to say that, to remind them that section 7 of this particular Act deals specifically with those measures that the council and the minister may prescribe. And also, it's been amended in order to include the measures pertaining to the late enrollment and non-deferred late enrollment and the late enrollment fees in terms of this. Honorable members, the new section 10 have been inserted to enable the owner builders to apply for exemption from section 10, which in principle requires the registration of home, you know, of home builders, and section 14, which relates to enrollment of the Act. And a new section 14A, honorable members, is intended to provide and to regulate late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. That will be the real essence of the new section 14A. It's intended specifically actually to regulate the late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. Honorable members, section 17 of the Act is also amended in order to extend and also to cover provided by the council warranty scheme to include the route list and enable the council under certain circumstances to make payments to the housing consumer in full and final settlement of the claim. Section 17 actually in principle and in essence it extends actually the provision that has been covered by the council before, the warranty scheme, to include also the route list. That will under the circumstances to make payments by the council of the housing consumer in full and final settlement of the claim. Otherwise, the list of contraventions of the Act that constitute offences, as set out in Section 21 of the Act itself, is amended to include Section 18.2. That would include, the duty of the conveyancer to ensure that a home builder is registered before attending to the registration of a home. In principle, it says that it's as set out in Section 21 of the Act itself. It's amended, like the inclusion in Section 18.2, the duty of the conveyancer, in principle, to ensure that the home builder is registered before attending to the registration of the bond itself. Honorable members, further, Section 22 of the Act is also amended by the insertion of the new subsection, which enables persons who are aggrieved by the decision of the council, in terms of Section 29, to lodge an appeal with the minister. People who are aggrieved, persons who are aggrieved actually by the council decision, not to honor that thing, are in terms of Section 29 to lodge an appeal, with the minister. This is necessitated by the amendment of Section 29 of the Act itself. Section 21 is also being amended, honorable members, to allow the council to grant or refuse application for exemption. The status quo currently is with the power of the minister. As a judge in the form of an appeal process is, however, built into Section 22 of the Act in order to ensure that exemptions are not refused unreasonably. That is what it provides input into Section 29. And honorable members, I would like further to include and also to emphasize that the issue of appeal and also the person who feels aggrieved by the decision. That are the other rationales for that is to incorporate that, to allow the honorable minister or certain appeal at least to approach the honorable minister with regard to the appeal in this regard. And lastly, honorable members, on Section 29, it's also been amended, as I've already indicated, that the Council of Grand will receive application for exemption currently with the power to address with the honorable minister. And as a judge in this form of an appeal process, how that during Section 22, to the Act in order to ensure that exemption are received and reasonable. And also to ensure that our minister also provides the minister within a reasonable point of time, a decision if the other person feels agreed in this regard. But furthermore, the rationale for all these particular changes that have been incorporated that I've referred to above, was because of the implementation and the problems that have arisen out of the implementation, the more especially experienced by our council, which is in here today. You can report it to the honorable members and say, questions in this regard. And also the same act, and object of the act also was variety, of stakeholders and consultants, in this regard. They've been public for public comments or public for public comments on the 23rd of August 2006. Invitations for comments were also sent personally to the HDRC, to the Council of the 20 Association of South Africa, all the mayor banks, the Interdepartment of Justice, SALGA, the Master Builder Association, and all the stakeholders which are involved in the building. And also, honorable members, the recent comments we have received from 9 provinces, for their comments, in this regard. And I want to emphasize on behalf of the department that we have been consultative, rightly in respect of this, and all the stakeholders within the building industry have been consulted, and also we have received their comments, including the comments from all the 9 provinces in this regard. Honorable members, This is the end of, you know, of my, you know, briefing, which is actually the background of in respect of this. And I'll have a chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then, are you then going to, on, okay, I can see how you present it. Are there any issues maybe that members would want to comment on?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I just wanted
to... There's one principle that we forgot to achieve, that as you seek to introduce yourself, of course, starting with me, I am a victim of that. I'm Rastiriti Papichau, originally representing the Northern Cape by the capital of the Select Committee, in the public service. I'm a mild victim for that. I think you must also have
thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Kwezi Ngwenya. I'm representing the National Department of Northern.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Kamal Pandey from KwaZulu-Natal Legislature. I put a query on this, and I'm not quite clear. Allowance is made for the late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. What is this non-declared late enrollment?
Yes, I did hear one of the questions.
Let me
give you an opportunity to respond. Maybe I'm constrained because one was not part of the initial briefing on this date. And I must be pardoned for asking irritating questions, which may be obvious, you know, and simple to other participants. Chair, I just want a definition from the standpoint of this amendment or the principal act of the owner builder. You see, because my own feeble mind tells me that there cannot be a monolithic application of that concept, both in theory and practice. I might be an owner builder from a point of view of asking Reverend Mwate, with his skills, no? Not registered with anybody, yeah? Our own arrangement. That this is how much I'm going to pay you. I've got a site, I've got an approved, whatever. Yeah? I think in my own understanding, I'm also an owner builder. There can be another element to it where myself, I'm capable of doing the actual construction and whatever. So I want a definition, really, so that I've got certainty in my mind in terms of
the intention
of this. Chair, in the presentation, it says a new section 10 has been inserted to enable the owner builders to apply for exemption from section 10. I don't understand this. A new 10 is inserted to allow builders to apply for exemption from Section 10. So which Section 10 is that then?
Yeah, Chairperson, I requested the presenter to be slow, but he was unable to be slow. He even excelled. So he will make a very bad teacher. I can talk very fast and I can talk very slow, so that you take everything I'm saying. So he failed tremendously. You know, I think we're dealing with a field of my competence. I have been an owner builder, and I experienced it when I came to Cape Town when I had to put up a house. With all the skills I had, I was interacting with the municipality where the site is, dealing with the inspectors, which implies, I'm saying I'm having the skills, I would be able to put up this house, but they will check every step I'm doing. It is before these new laws come into practice. And I would love you to make it very clear for me. That time I need not apply to anybody. But every step I was doing, it was checked by the local inspector of that particular municipality. And okay, then I go to the next step. Just like that until I completed the house. Now I want to understand this law. What is this law saying? What should I do to put up another house like I did? Is it impeding me to do it, or is it creating more space for owners, builders? Because we need more houses in South Africa. Many people need houses. Are we making it difficult for the owners, builders, or are we encouraging more owners, builders? That I want to understand very clearly in my mind. It's not clear. You were really running. I was grappling to catch with you, but it was not possible. I wanted to put up questions, but you ran away. The registration, if you talk of the council, which council are you referring to? Is it the HBRC or is it the municipality also, because there's a municipality where I have to. Can you clarify that also, you know? You talk of declaring an unenrolled, I think it's been asked a question. You're talking of late enrollment, which means there is an earlier enrollment where, and you talk of late enrollment fees, something like this. And what are the fees? How much should one pay? Owner, builder must apply. Then you ran away. I could not get to the other things you were saying, but you said owner, builders must apply. Where should he apply? When? You know. You're talking of roof leaks. Warranty including the roof leaks. I think I understand the warranty. That warranty is important. But can you elaborate also on the warranty itself so that we understand? Thank you, Chair.
Is there any other member who wants to take any comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Dennis Neer from the Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature. Chair, with due respect to the presenter, you know, I think some people had an opportunity of going through the act in detail, discuss it, understood why there should be amendments. We don't. We did not catch what you requested the presenter to explain the rationale. Why there is an amendment? What are the implications? What were the implications before the amendment? What will be the implications after the amendment? I'm also somebody who has got a little experience in being an own builder. I built my own house, I ran out of money, went to the bank. The bank said, bring the following certificate from the NHBRC, this and that and that, and the enrollment certificate and all those things. That's when I understood what to be an own builder means. And what are the implications if you don't register? Now, I cannot in this explanation understand what is going to change now. Because it refers to clauses in the bill. It therefore assumes that you have gone through the bill and you understand the bill itself. What I would have expected is that just a clarification to say, clause so-and-so deals with this. Therefore, the amendment, I think that's how we begin to understand why the amendment, because the act was saying something else, now the amendment would change that to reflect something else. I think that's the simple explanation we're requesting from the president, so that we can structuralize the presentation before we go to the detail of the bill. Now, the technical aspects we talked about. Thank you, sir.
Any other member before? Okay, another member.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Tim Gibbard. I'm the Chair of the Continental Legislature Housing. I want to go back to Section 8, and I was going to leave that for the second round, but I'm raise it now while it's still. That's on page 5. The whole issue, to my knowledge, of an insurance-linked issue, in this case, the NHRBC. The question of that is 8B. If money is not available, or is expected not to be available, that defeats the whole object of a warranty. The consumer, at the end of the day, pays that percentage towards an NHRBC for that warranty. Now, if it's ambiguous to say if we've got no money, that means to say, if there is funds within the NHRBC kitty, then we'll do it. And if we don't have any money, then sorry, hard luck. I want more clarity on that.
Honorable Stoller, and then we would allow the department, then we can go for a second.
Chairman, I'm sorry. I also had that question, but there's also maybe a follow-up. I think Chairperson must take this issue raised by the honorable member from KwaZulu-Natal quite seriously, because we need paradigm shift in the manner in which we are approaching the housing construction, you know, and housing of our people in South Africa. We cannot do things the same way we're doing them, you know, in the last 13 years. There's a whole barrage of criticism about, against our government about this issue, né? And for me, the central issue here is nothing else but the consumer. Né? And I really want to be clear and convinced in my mind that at the heart of whatever formulation that you are putting in, the honorable member, I think the consumer's interests, you know, are protected. It cannot be neither there nor, you know, nor here. You know, it cannot be. I mean, we won't be a developmental state if we are going to take that approach. So I think it's quite fundamental to hear more, you know. I'm following up on the question for the
Okay, can I then give the department to respond? I guess it's not only the presenter will be responding. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Petula Makhase, the Chief Executive of the NHRC. I think I need to give a clearer understanding, because I can easily see where the gaps are. The NHRC is established to protect housing consumers. That's one part. The second part, the NHRC is created to regulate home building industry. Now, the two legs have a number of implications for the home building industry. When you talk about regulating the home building industry, it's like giving a license to drugs. The NHRBC issues a registration certificate. That's what happens to the builder, and that would be your Section 10. I'll talk about Section 10A. Now, when we say we are regulating the home building industry, it means now we enroll the property. We are taking liability for major structural defects on a property. That is how protection is manifesting itself with NHRBC. Now, I'm going to start with the last question that talks about if monies are not available. If the NHRBC, for some reason or the other, does not have funds, Parliament or the Ministry will have to provide that funding. When this matter was discussed at the Portfolio Committee level, the Portfolio Committee looked at the funds available to the NHRBC. I'll say with certainty that for the past 4 years, we have received a positive report from the Children's Science that says the NHRBC is solvent. On the basis of that, the Portfolio Committee then deleted the issue of non-availability or availability of funds. Now, what you see on page 8, subsection B, the words that are bold there have been removed, which means they are not
part of the amendment.
The NHBRC takes full liability.
Now, when we talk about the waste in bracket, those bold ways, if money is not available, whether money has been removed from the amendment, which means after the amendment, we'll not have that. Now, just to talk a little bit about availability of money, as members will appreciate and as members have seen in our annual report, every year the NHBRC submits to a civil scientist an evaluation of our fees. We are on sound basis, even this current financial year, although we have not received the latest audit, NHBRC is solvent, which means we will not have to go to the minister or come to parliament and ask for funding. So that should be the understanding of that particular clause. Now I'll move to the second last question, which is very critical, which says, what has really changed after and before? Now, if you look at the Act, we are providing, this is in terms of protecting the housing consumer, we have been providing a 5-year warranty. Now, the question that was asked is, what's going to happen from now on once the bill has become an Act, once the amendment has been passed? Then you still retain the 5-year warranty. What we are including as new is the roof leaks, which means that the NHBRC is now taking additional liability. The NHBRC will then pay for roof leaks. That's the inclusion of roof leaks. If you look at the previous section, roof leaks were not included as part of the benefits to the housing consumer. Of course, there has been a question relating to Section 10 and Section 10A. Section 10A is about regulating the industry. It is about people that want to trade and are not licensed to trade. Drivers that drive on the road without having licenses. Now the Act says every home builder in the country, that's what is current, must be registered with the NHBRC. So that the NHBRC can have control over the home building industry. Now Section 10 requires everybody to register. Now this brings me to home owner. I'll come later to that because I know it needs a very lengthy explanation. There was also a request for late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. In terms of the current legislation, before and after, in terms of the current legislation, everybody has to enroll a property 15 days prior to construction. The reason for requesting 15 days prior to construction is for the NHBRC to be notified that the house will be built. Secondly, for the NHBRC to issue an enrollment certificate. We're talking about protection of the housing consumer here. Now, before that certificate is issued in terms of the Act, no construction to start on site. But I think I need also indicate that when the main Act was promulgated, construction was taking place. So provision was made in the regulation for late enrollment. But that was not clearly stipulated in the main Act. Now what we are doing with the amendment, if this is passed, in the new amendment, we will have in the main Act late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. But I need to explain what late enrollment is. A person starts construction, I think a good example has been given earlier by the Honorable Minister, by the Honorable Member. I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Now, the late enrollment is where a person unknowingly starts construction without enrolling with the NHBRC. Like I've indicated earlier on, when the Act was passed, construction was taking place. Now, the intention was to take all those people on board so that the housing consumer can be protected. So if there is such a late enrollment, and the home builder comes to the NHBRC, or the housing consumer comes to the NHBRC and say, my house is not enrolled, we will then say, we will enroll this house. These are the steps that are required to enroll a home. Now, a non-declared late enrollment, that's where a home builder deliberately deceives a housing consumer or tries to deceive council. We have set up an inspection system where we pay people for finding out houses that are not enrolled, because it's also illegal not to enroll homes. Now, we call a non-declared late enrollment, because in that instance,
neither the home builder or the housing consumer did come forward to the NHBRC. You'll find that the house has been found or discovered, if you like, by the NHBRC inspector. So that is a non-declared late enrollment. Because it's a non-declared enrollment, there will also be penalties and there will be a process of ensuring that the property can be enrolled. Now, when we talk about enrollment, you need to think highly about how you protect the housing consumer. NHBRC, in terms of the current legislation, also has the right to refuse that enrollment if the home builder and the housing consumer fail to comply with the requirements. Now, I need to come to the lengthy one, which is owner builder. What have been the challenges in the market? We have had people that have said to us that they do not want to enroll or register with the NHBRC. In terms of the acts, these people need to apply to the minister and say, we want to be exempted from the acts. Then the minister, the previous minister, not the current one, delegated this responsibility to the NHBRC. A person applies to the NHBRC, gives reasons why he should be exempted. Now, what this type of builders sometimes do is that they build a house claiming that they will not sell it. And after finishing construction, they sell it. Now that then dispossesses the housing consumer of protection. It means to excluding a person from enjoying a 5-year warranty. Now what the Act is trying to do is to make sure that only persons that are building for own occupation and will not be selling, making money out of this property, and those people really have been in the industry for some time and have got the skills. We are talking about engineers here who will be personally engaged in the construction of the home. Now, the council's position, as you have seen, in a manner prescribed by council, will not be allowing a person to construct more than 2 houses. You can only have one exemption because it's for own occupation. So it restricts continuous building and exposing the risk to the housing consumer. If you want to protect the housing consumer, you need to say to that housing consumer, you are protected for 5 years. But if I go and build my own house and sell it later, the housing consumer will have lost on that protection. In terms of the writing of the Act, Section 10 and Section 10A, the new addition, that is before, you did not have owner-builder defined. It was a process that was administratively handled by the NHBRC. Now, this exposes NHBRC to criticism. Now, we wanted to realign and ensure that there is in the main Act owner-builder, there is in the main Act late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment. I leave it to my colleagues to add if I've excluded any questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any follow-ups maybe from anyone? The department, any first NHBRC? If none, then can I take another round of questions, comments, proposals, and so forth? Okay, my man. And then, Reverend.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you give me some leeway. I might be straying from the issues of the bill before us, but just for my own enlightenment, and I think enlightenment of the other members who might not be privy to issues within the construction industry. And I want to talk here to our legal people within the department. Firstly, I want to see if there can be no constitutional challenge to the issue of limitations of, as the gentleman from the NHRB said, that you'll be limited to a maximum of 2 homes in your lifetime that you can deem as owner builder. I'm just looking at it from the wide spectrum that there can be a constitutional challenge who gives you the authority to say what I can do and what I can't do. The second one is the issue of the legality or the illegality not to enroll. Because the premise that we work on registration is one of issue of warranty. Now, hypothetically, I'm going to take Reverend's earlier comment. I want to build a house. I've got my own resources. I've got my own money. I don't need to go and register for a warranty for the NHRBC. I employ my my own laborers and artisans, whatever, to build me a house. I'm not going to take a loan from the banks to subsidize the building of the house. I can do it within my own resources. I go take an insurance on my completed building from a private, from an insurance company, whatever, to say, I'm insured against X, Y, and Z. I'm questioning the legality here of what we're trying to impose. And then we come back to application for late enrollment. Because again, we take a hypothetical question that I build my own house. 5 years down the line, I decide to sell it. And the person who is going to buy my house will surely will need some sort of warranty. And I want clarity from the NSRBC, because if you go, the person is going to buy, who might not have the money, will go to a building society or a bank to say, I need bond finance for this house. Then the issue will come in, has the previous owner registered? What were the qualifications of inspection? And I'll give you one example. If you do electrical in your house, then the municipalities demand that you must have an electrician who is registered with the Wireman's Association, whatever, whatever. The issue being it being professional. You can't have a Kokoba man coming and pulling wires there and say, I'm an electrician. You have to have a certificate of compliance from a qualified electrician to say, I have wired this house. And when it's finished, they give you a compliance certificate to say, everything is kosher. I come back to the issue of now the bank will say we demand some sort of compliance certificate. You are the owner builder. You might have built better than what the NHRBC requires, but we need these warranties for the new owner. So can I have some clarity or more discussion on that?
Yes, Chairperson. Yeah, teachers can never be the same. You get my point? Teachers can never be the same. Yeah, it's quite interesting. Now we start understanding, you know, where we go coming from and where we're going to. It becomes much more interesting. You know, especially the person who applies for exemption. That's where the problem lies. Because obviously, very far into the future, this person or somebody else would love to fail. You know, I'm saying this because before this came, and we are introducing it now, as I said earlier, I constructed a house as an owner, builder. And this house was inspected. Every step. It does not mean when I'm an owner's house, I'm then exempted from being inspected. I think that should not be the case. And therefore, it's where the problem comes in. It sounds as if you're saying this person is exempted, even to be inspected. And that's why you're saying he qualifies to build one house only, not many houses, because if it becomes many houses, this person then will be tempted to sell. You are not clear on that. I want to understand what you mean. Is he exempted from being inspected because he applied to be exempted? That's that one. Communal land, housing in communal land, you think you're protecting consumers. We have communal land, whereas we are seated here. Construction is on of unregistered people. No inspection is being done. As I'm seated here, I see one house, foundation were dug, casted, floor height was built. They are now busy casting slab. And the way the slab is being cut at is not correct. It's not down the levels, it's going up like this. There is no infection. And this person will have to live with that house. There's no infection in communal housing construction. Can you tell me how you protect the consumer if that is the case? NAPRC, are you all over the country in every town, township? What is the position? How are you being consulted? How accessible are you? How are you of help to the consumers? If you are of help to the consumers, you must be accessible all over. And I don't know of any in my area. And therefore, I want to know how accessible you are. Enroll 15 days before construction. Well, that is under normal circumstances. Obviously, you're saying if somebody has kicked off constructing, can do late registration. That one is understood. This money you're talking all that you are solvent, it's not me in my mind what you're talking about. Can people come to you and get money free of charge? Or is it a loan? Or what is it? Because you're saying you will pay for the lease. That money is not known to me, and therefore, if it is not known to me, what more than to the consumers outside? The consumers you're claiming to be protecting. It's not known to me that you have such money that you are not solvent. It means people do not know about you. That's why you are not solvent. You are not insolvent. You get my point? It means you are not known. Somebody has the money for this current year and does not spend anything and say, I have saved. You have not saved, you have robbed. Because that money is supposed to have, you know, brought about production to the masses on the ground. That understanding, and therefore I want to understand your money. I want to go to my constituents and say the NHGRC has money. Let's make it to be, not to be solvent, so that we utilize the money they are going boasting about it, that they are not solvent, they cannot even go to the minister to go and ask for more money because they are so rich, they have so much money. I have a problem with that. Maybe let me pause there, Jay. You see, I start enjoying now the subject because it's becoming clear.
And I just hope that we won't have a quotation from the Bible on that subject matter, housing. But it's true, Reverend Wonto. And Honorable Tulani, did you raise your hand?
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to say to Mr. Gwenyam. I will shut your mouth. you know, last time, I'm sure you see why we said they must not send you alone. It's not just because you were, according to me, a bad teacher, but now they were not there to answer what today is answered. Really, if they were not here today also, we're going to wonder what are we going to pray for our province. Just because they just sent you alone and were so many questions like these that today are answered. Thanks for that. That is the department realized that you need to arm ourselves and not just send one person what the information is not there. It was a bad reflection whether the department knows what it is wanting. So today were in a better position. Here in Western Cape, Comrade Adams, there was, I don't know, a construction of women, that the women must build RDP houses. I do want to check what is your involvement in those women constructions. Are you assisting them, or are you applying whatever you are saying? And then myself and this committee, and on my left hand side, the chairperson of housing in Eastern Cape, were so horrible houses in PE that they have got leaks and cracks. I wanted to check, what do you do about that? If you do have maybe some money that you cannot want, that the minister must pop out, is it your role that when the RDP houses are like that, that they do have cracks, leaks, that you can pop out your money without wanting it from the minister to correct that? Or were you involved in that construction of those houses called RDP houses? I'm sure RDP houses is from the government. And then I wanted to check your involvement on those houses, which are very, very bad. I wanted to ask that. There are also rural houses which are built by municipalities. What is your role there? Just because, for instance, in my area, in OR, in my location called Ontario, there are houses which are built by the municipalities. What is your involvement in that? Just because these also are monies from the government. If by chance something happened like the ones that were stolen in PE, what is going to be your role? Or are you also involved in the rural housing that we are implementing that? You know, I'm asking this question sometimes as leaders. We do appreciate that our women must be in the construction, but at the same time, if we're applying laws, some of us would be saying that, there you are now, how are these women in construction are going to benefit if we're applying some standards? But if we can just elaborate even on that, just because there is an opportunity that women can be in the construction industry, I wanted to check, what are you doing to assist government that those people who are in the construction must have skills, or what is your role as a leader?
Chair, can I take a point of order before the next speaker comes in?
Okay.
I just want to listen to my colleague. The word location was a pre-1994 definition. We don't use it anymore now. So. Township, not location.
So on the basis, I think I'm still the chair here. Yeah? And let me note your order as an issue for further discussion at another point. But for now, let's stick to the subject matter as presented. Can I take the next one and then we'll follow on our foot?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think I'm waiting with a bit of press really to see how the response is going to be like in terms of what Mr. Tinkibode has raised, the legal challenge, because I had that particular point as well. But concurrently with that, the vulnerable appears to be exempt from the Act. And what I'm not understanding, this Does it mean that there will be a deviation from the construction in terms of standards? In terms of that? The other one that I have here is a non-declared late enrollment, an issue which I raised, and I think it was clarified in terms of the definition. And I thought it was the very same thing, that it's an illegal construction. Now, if it is an illegal construction, and from what you have indicated over here, there's an allowance is made, which means that it's being condoned. Now, what is being condoned? And if it is being condoned, is it again in respect of standards?
Sir, he said attempted to rise on the border, but I'm not going to do that. For reasons that I'm going to show. Sir, last year I shared some discussions with you. I'm thinking that Reverend Mwate is very vocal on this issue. That's why our president and the Minister of Finance should be the one all the time. When they go out in an outreach program in Gauteng, they discover that what we define as delivery to our people, due to poor workmanship, our people were far better when they were in their shed than when they are in those houses. I raised this issue with you. In Fiji, in your own hometown, we were there. There are red, no, RBT houses there. In fact, the whole country. Why? Why should it be the minister? The minister raised a very fundamental point, which I believe Parliament as a tribunal of the people should seize itself with this question, unapologetically. To say, Department of Housing, what do you mean? If you are saying you have built 10 million houses, for an example, what do you mean? Are you also counting unoccupied houses where the contractors have not finished houses? Or are you also counting, in your statistics, thousands and thousands of houses which people have occupied, but there are no more houses, And these people are running loose, the fact. They are running loose and they are continuing to do business with the department and whatever. And it is not about 10%. The issue of housing is a revolution in South Africa, in government, in society at large. That is why, rightly so, the discussions now are no longer on the B, but they are on the NHDRC. Nothing is to be declared. But I propose here that maybe for purposes of structured discussions and debate, at some point, with your good self, you must really call the NHDRC. Because the Reverend is right. Uma Mwase Virginia doesn't know that she has got a recourse. She's not told by a council. MPs, constituencies, we don't know this thing. NHDRC. I can talk about my own experience. 1996, I bought a house. It crashed before 5 years. I wasn't aware until somebody else who learned it said, no, you have a recourse. No, it was a bond house. No, it was built. It was a newly built house, not a footstool. It's a footstool thing, I learned some of these things. But now, after I was assisted, I was saying, how many of our people are aware that government has got this kind of services and intervention? So the point I'm raising here is that it's natural that given problems and experiences that the debating is degenerated. And I want to caution you that I remember, please don't forget that we are dealing with a deal, not NHDRC and what it is doing and its budget and all those things. But I think it will be very helpful at some point that we actually convene NHDRC. Because my own judgment and observation, unless I'm convinced otherwise, there are somewhere in an office, good flyers that are expensive, that are read by the elite, who does not need their services. But people in the Eastern Cape, in the township, people in KwaZulu-Natal, who are supposed to be beneficiaries of your services, are not aware of that. Then we need to engage in a collaborative dialogue, Parliament, NHDRC, and everybody else, and ensure how do we intensify an outreach to ensure that we address all these problems. Because they are continuing on a daily basis. They are continuing in Virginia, the houses that were built in my own constituency. President raised concerns about that. I am saying to you, no single house has been repaired in that province until now. You know, there's NHGRC. Reverend, you are right. It is solvent. My understanding solvent or solvent. I'm not an economist. You know, is that it has got money. It can intervene in that thing. You know, but it is not just a simple issue of the NHGRC. So talk about the department, policy assurance, you know, accountability issues now to all the structures, you know, coordinate and link in terms of ensuring that there's a quality delivery of houses to the masses of our people. So I was not rising on this point, Chairperson. Only note that it is likely to steal away the real substance of the discussion on the thing. But it's legitimate, you know, given accumulated anger of 13 years, where people were not aware. Reverend is so emotional, I can see him, I know he. He never knew that he can tell his constituents, you know, look, man, you are not helpless. If this person has built a house to you, and the house has got these faults within this period, this is what he can do. I mean, he's legitimate. He never knew about it. He only knew about it. So it's a separate issue. Accountability of the NHGRC. What is it that it is doing? And how, as representatives of the people, can we help it to do better? Because we cannot only sit back and see criticize, we must also assist, you know, to ensure that it achieves what it's intended, you know, to achieve. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Victoria and fellow honorable members. Before I give to the department and take a last round, I just wanted to make a few comments. Of course, the Honorable Watson's hand was up, and I deliberately avoided taking it now, because I know that in the last time you'll be able to express particular view. I wanted to take the issues Honorable Members have raised by the Honorable Setona and other members. I don't want to be a representative of NHGRC. Equally so, I think it is my responsibility also to be objective on certain issues. And one of the things, of course, thank you, Honorable Setona, because I was getting a bit worried that the discussion now is now degenerating into an NHGRC role as an organization. Of course, one takes the point that perhaps not much work has been done by NHGRC in terms of the extent to which they have popularized themselves and entrenched themselves amongst our community. But equally so, it would not be correct to therefore conclude that NHGRC had never appeared before the Select Committee to present themselves and the kind of programs that they have and the kind of programs that they provide to our people. As far as my knowledge can tell me, we had NHGRC last year and including this year under the then leadership of Mr. Moroka, who is now the newly appointed DG of Public Works. Honorable members, if you can remember that even the last time, just before, when Mr. Moroka was going to be introduced as a newly appointed DG of Public Works, we had to excuse him in that meeting, where he was making a presentation on NHGRC and their program. In actual fact, he was presenting the annual report of the NHGRC. And just 5 minutes before 12 o'clock, or 10 minutes before 12 o'clock, we had to excuse him in order for him to go over and be formally introduced by the minister to the media as the newly appointed DG of Public Works. Therefore, I just thought that one need to just put some of the issues in a correct perspective. Of course, just taking note of the fact that there are some challenges that are quite important. important, and we need to wake up to that, because it is quite true. If I were an HDRC, I would not even have mentioned that we are solvent, because what is the reality? Even in our last presentation was NHBRC. Quite important and critically that we raised was our experience of the Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth. The kind of constructed houses, the extent to which NHBRC was not helpful to our people and so forth. We were very critical around that. And we were given a commitment in that meeting by NHBRC to say that this is the kind of work that they are going to do in Port Elizabeth. And of course, not only Port Elizabeth have we raised these things. There were some serious issues raised to say, but if you say you are balanced, your leisure is balanced, but the outcry outweighs the satisfaction of our people, what is it that NHBRC is doing and so forth? So I think it is an important issue that we need to take note of. Of course, I accept, and I think it's one of the major important things, because in our oversight work, as we've been doing, we have noted that one of the critical problems that have been consistently raised, especially by our people on constructed houses, is the extent to which roof leaks have been covered by the legislation. The material also that is used for roofing these houses and so forth. And it has been quite a problem. And I think it's a matter that as a committee we will take note of and quite welcome. The question that I would want to put to the department, and especially of course the department and NHBRC, is one of the things the Department of Housing is looking at is the question of rural housing. We had a rural housing in Durban now recently, and now what comes to mind is the extent to which this piece of legislation, requirements, and whatever NHBRC has in place, to what extent has it been aligned to fit into that? Or are we expecting another amendment maybe in the future to realign the legislation, therefore, to balance this thing? So I think it is important that if the committee can be clarified on that kind of an issue. The question, the other question relates to the reasonability of time in terms of your section, section 10 of offense. Lodging of an appeal. You are precise when it comes to the lodging of an appeal with the minister. That is in 60 days. You say 3 months. But the response you say within reasonable time. How do you define reasonable time? What is reasonable time to our people? If you say to me that within 60 days you must have done this, but I will respond to you in reasonable time. And reasonable time can be 2 years, can be 3 years, and so forth. So I think it is important that we get that clarity as a committee on the reasonability of time. I think some other questions, of course, the state law advisor is here, will be able to assist us those legal questions and so forth. The limitations that goes with it, and I think it's quite important. I know there is a piece of legislation that gives you the right to buy, the right to construct and sell, but for more than 3 houses, there's an amount that you get taxed on and blah blah blah. I just can't remember very well what I'm talking about, but I know there is that kind of a thing which seeks to recognize your citizens'
forward. Whatever, as a citizen of the country, you've got a right to practice in business. Of course, one takes the point. One takes the point that whilst we are trying to whilst the basis to manage and control the extent to which people would apply for exemption, would it be, because that is what is worried, is the reason behind the application of exemption registration fee or restrictions or what are these things that make people to apply for exemption? Or is it just another greedy way of doing business and not wanting to oblige to put in rules and regulations that fix to manage the processes? Therefore, let me give the department and then allow the Honorable Wati to come in. Rahul still wants to make comment as well. And then we look at how then we take the process forward. Or do you also want to come back to the issue?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. In terms of the kind of responses that we get. I think so. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I agree that the discussion has gone beyond the very stuff. But I think it is appropriate that we as NSDF, we feel really grateful that the questions are asked, because half the time we do not always have this opportunity. At the last meeting, we couldn't attend because we were not informed. Initially, we advised that the bill is a section 75, it's not a section 76, so NADRC will not have to come to the NCOP, so that is the only logic why we didn't show up. I also need to indicate that Mr. Moroka was waiting for CEFCON and to Delisha. He was not waiting for the NADRC. It was me who made the presentation regarding the funds of the NADRC and the solvency of the NHDRC. Having said that, Chair and Honourable Members, I'm really grateful that I need to differentiate between subsidy housing and non-subsidy housing. When we became a statutory body in 2001, we were concentrating on the non-subsidy houses, bonded houses and unbonded houses. We were not a player in the subsidy sector, that is, state-funded housing. The NHBRC moved into the subsidy sector on the instruction of the minister in 2002. That was when the request was raised. The actual involvement of the NHBRC in the subsidy sector was in 2003. And the active and effective involvement started to demonstrate itself in 2004. I will say to this committee without doubt that there are still provinces in this country that have not enrolled with the NHBRC. And those provinces are acting illegally. But that process will be taken up by the National Department. Why am I raising this issue? It's because when ordinary members of the public see houses, they say, where was the NHBRC? NHBRC only gets involved in houses that are enrolled with the NHBRC. Now, most of the units that are not enrolled with the NHBRC will not be rectified by the NHBRC. That's the reason we mentioned a 15-day enrollment, both subsidy and non-subsidy today. Because once the project is enrolled, we said we protect the housing consumer. We know about it. We are liable. We will go and undertake remedial works. So we need to have that understanding of the difference between subsidy housing and non-subsidy housing. Members of Parliament can raise the question, when was the house constructed? Is this project registered with the NHBRC? If the municipality or the province say the house is not enrolled with the NHBRC, it needs to be understood that the province and the municipality is liable for a major work.
Can I just interrupt you? Can you just quickly give us those two provinces?
No, it's more than two.
Okay, can you give us a seven quickly?
Almost all of the provinces have not all enrolled.
Okay, give us that one that is enrolled.
Let me put it this way. 2004, very few provinces were enrolled. As of this year, most of the provinces have enrolled. But I can safely say, in Northwest, there are projects that are not enrolled. I'll safely say, in the Mpopo, there are provinces that are not enrolled. In KwaZulu-Natal, I don't have the list now. I don't want to make many mistakes.
But you can see what that.
But I can provide that to the chair, the full list.
Thank you.
Of provinces that have not enrolled property to the NHGRC. I think the department will answer that because we've been providing this information to the department. I'll leave it that question to the department to answer. But ourselves and the national department are continuously persuading provinces to enroll with the NHBRC. I'm just wanted to clear that. The second one was the municipalities. All the houses that we are complaining about today, municipalities were there, engineers were there, architects were there in the subsidy sector. They were wrongly done because there was no supervisor, there was no NHGRC playing a role in that market. And they knew that nobody would take them to court. Now, with the VNG houses, with the minister has spoken about, the 40 square meter house, with a two bedroom, with a toilet, with a shower, we said to the provinces at a midnight meeting, all those properties must be enrolled with the NHBRC. Now, I need to talk a little bit about provinces and provincial managers. NHBRC has as a role, and maybe we need to reassess ourselves in the provincial housing committees. The provincial managers will make presentations to the provincial housing committees so that they can have a feel of the business of NHBRC. It was done in 2003. I know it wasn't done in 2005, 2006. We have to bring everybody on board. The question regarding women. NHBRC offers free training. We have approached women organizations. We have approached the National Youth Commission. We have read adverts countrywide saying to people, come for free training. We will do it again. We'll have that advert. When we call this free training, it's free training in the sense that the individuals don't pay. It's the NHBRC that pays accredited service providers. Those are service providers accredited with seekers. So that training remains free, and anybody can help us ensuring that people come for free training. We also have a youth training program, so a youth are trained for province. We are spending about 18,000 per learner in the Limpopo province. We are spending 23,000 per learner in the Eastern province. And we are now on road to have agreement with Northern Cape, Free State, and Northwest, and KwaZulu-Natal. That's where we also want to introduce youth training programs, where we take 10 groups of youth. I can safely say in this meeting that any grouping of women that come to the NHBRC and require training will receive that free training. But as it needs to be understood, it will not be offered to one person due to the cost. But we've got groups of 20, 50, NHBRC gets closer to the people we offer training. Having said that, there was a question of visibility. NHBRC has offices in all the provinces, manned by provincial managers. We have now gone to the extent of establishing satellite offices. I'll give an example of a satellite office in Witbank in Mpumalanga, with a satellite office in Eastern Cape George, satellite office in Northwest Klerksdorp. I can provide a list of satellite offices in addition to our provincial offices. That is where we talk about one-stop shop. Those are in a developmental stage, but we'll give you a full report on established satellite offices. That backs up and feeds the provincial offices. With regard to the issue of home enrollment and late enrollment, this late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment results in penalties. When we talk about penalties, the developer is going to pay for our inspectors to go and inspect on site because they have failed to enroll in time. Quality is not compromised. As you will know, there is destructive inspection and non-destructive inspection. Non-destructive is where we request the builder to destroy the whole structure so that we can know what is underneath. In some instances, then we'll dig up under half. These are the different measures that are engaged in on late enrollment, declared and non-declared. So late enrollment is a penalty. And the reason we're bringing to that is that we've been challenged that it is only in the regulations and not in the main act. So that needs to be understood. People should not defy the laws of the land. That is our position. With regard to our participation in communal land and rural housing, I think the chair has quite answered the question. We are not a player yet in rural housing. So we are not all over South Africa. The Indaba is one of the processes that we started saying we need to move into the rural housing. One of the challenges, just to give the honorable members a feel, is that we are doing design for rural people. One of the issues that was raised was the WC, the toilet needs not be inside, it needs to be outside. Because some of the rural people say the inside toilets are more for the children and the women. Outside is for the men. So those designs need to be done. And after the last round of the Indaba, we'll then have a policy at the national level to deal with rural housing. The issue regarding the warranty, it does not, the warranty is transferable during the period of 5 years. If you enroll a property today, you sell it to the next person automatically enjoys the warranty. So it's a transferable cover. With the issue of the legality of the Act, be it registration of home builders and enrollment of homes, we have been challenged, and people have been saying they'll take us to the Constitutional Court. The truth of the matter is, the Act is legal. The fact that the state is saying you need to license people, you need to enroll properties, I'll leave it to the state law advisor. All these are meant to protect members of the public against unscrupulous and unwanted unregistered home builders. The issue of solvency and the money, I was raising it in the light of that clause, that we have money, and that money is there for remedial works. Because I'm not having the data with me now, over a period of 5 years, we have spent over 20 million where we are repairing houses. In the main, it will be the non-subsidy houses. We have not yet experienced claims from provinces or municipalities. As I'm speaking today, no municipality in South Africa and no province in South Africa can say they've submitted a claim to NHBRC to undertake remedial work. It's because those properties are not enrolled. With regard to the issue of avoidance, getting to the last, or reasonable time, we have put that as the employees of the minister, that the minister will respond within reasonable time. So really the NHBRC cannot dictate the time to meet to the minister. We can only dictate to ourselves and say we must respond within 60 days. So that we leave open to the department, we believe the minister will respond within reasonable time. With regard to people that have been calling themselves owner builders, I think the chair, you are right. People who are trying to undermine the act. People that want to become owner builders are people that do not want to pay an enrollment fee and people that do not want to register with the NHBRC. The only logic they would give and the reason we have to say we need owner builder was to say we are not really a restrictive institution, but you need really to prove that this property is not going to be sold. But what has been our experiences? Our experiences are simple. The head of the family passes away, the family cannot sell the house because the property is not enrolled and the bank will not support it because they've got an agreement with the bank. Now the intention of the Act is to encourage more people to register and more properties to be enrolled. So it is really an exception. If I have the statistics, I'll give you one or two that have been exempted. But not many people get exempted because I had to put a restriction to that, because the future is unknown. Chairperson, I have tried to decide on electrical work. We have our instructors from construction up to end. I think there have been a number of the presentation where NLGRC is gradually moving into occupational certificate. We have not reached that stage. What we have done in the meantime, we have offered what we call forensic audit to provinces. We charge provinces to do this work. When we do forensic audit, we go to the structures that are now in existence, we send engineers, they give an opinion, and they give a solution to failing structures. And we pass that information back to the province. If I were to give an estimate, I know in Gauteng and in Northwest, we have completed a few forensic audits. And the figures for remedial work are a bit frightening, because the government will have to spend more money again to undertake remedial works on failing subsidy structures. But the PNG house in our hope will never fail us, because quality is an issue. I thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
This material, I won't go into an in-depth discussion with it. I don't want to be pedantic, although I see that most of the members like teachers. So the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, as we all know, can be limited. But Section 22 reads that every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely. But Section 22 of the Constitution has an internal qualifier that says the practice of the trade, occupation, or profession may be regulated by law. And when we drafted the National Health Act, we had to go into this thing into depth, because the doctors and the nurses were up in arms. So the building industry is regulated not only by this visual legislation, but also by, I think it's for building regulation of the Public Works Act. Yeah. So this is regulating the building industry further. The reason for this regulation is because of the socio-economic rights that our Constitution also has, the right to adequate housing. And government, in terms of the Oslo section 7 of the Constitution, must respect, protect, promote, and fulfill the rights, and obviously within the financial constraints. So this bill, this act, the principal act, the long title of it is that the bill is to make provision for the protection of housing consumers. That is the reason why the internal qualifier of Section 22 comes into play, and it is constitutional in our mind. That is why we also certified it, saying that it is constitutional. The legality of the question is not enrolling. The amendment bill clearly states, or clearly try to set up the definition of an owner builder. It is that it means a person who builds a home for occupation by himself or herself. Or a person who is not a registered home builder and who assists a person contemplated in paragraph A, that is the person who builds a home for occupation by him or herself, in the building of that home. And also the new section 1A and clause 2, the application of the act applies to any home builder, but it does not apply to a person, and that is where the PhD project comes, who uses his own labor to build a home for his own occupation zone called an approved PhD project. So a person who is a home builder, as per definition, can apply for exemption. And if it's unreasonably not given an exemption, he can appeal to the minister. Just maybe one thing is that the owner builder builds a house, although the NHBRC is not a player, that Honourable Women will still comply with in all other relevant legislation, be it bylaws or ordinance or provincial laws, etc. And there's no prohibition against an Honourable Women telling his out in time. If he has to move to another province, another town, he can sell out, but then the usual buyer-seller relationship comes into play. I think, gee, that is so far I can take it.
No, thank you very much. The last comment, the amendment.
Follow up to the legal issues that I had raised and which you got the reply from.
Okay.
I'm still not clear on my issue of the challenge of legality comes in the issue of prohibition. There's no prohibition between buyer-seller. And again, I'm saying hypothetically, if the Reverend Bertie's house conforms to every bylaw within his municipality, above board with the standard of the quality of his finish. But when the purchaser of that building has to go apply for that bond or finance to buy that building, then the issue will come back to say, this building was not registered. You got no compliance from NHRBC. So there is a prohibition on the part of the now seller, in this case the Reverend, selling his house to me. And he has to come forward with that compliance to say, you don't comply, sorry, we can't give you the bond. So that's where my issue of constitutionality comes in. That it is not of your making, and it is of your choice. The Reverend chose to build his house on his own. He chose to do it the right way. He chose not to go pay his levy to the NHRBC because he thought, why must I go and pay when I don't need the services? But now that I am selling, this act is hanging over my head.
Do you want to take a
5 minutes? Yes. Okay. That's exactly what you are clarifying. Every time you are an owner builder, you pass your sign with the NHRBC that you will not be selling that property within the first 5 years, because you are avoiding the fee, you are saying I'm competent. If there was competency, wouldn't be saying there are failures in houses. There are failures in houses because the very people that say they are going to build a quality house, not all the time build a quality house. Instead, they will avoid the law, build the house, realize the house is failing, try to pass the risk to another person. So the law is intending to stop that. Now, the legality of that would be, is it illegal for government to protect the housing consumer? That's the debate that I said, it was raised with us, where people said, we do not need the NHRBC, we can run on our own, we do not want to register. We said, go and test this in court. And the results have been all the time, we need to act this one. Now, if you as a housing consumer want to be exposed, we will tell you, this house has not ever warranted. Now, the banks have agreed with us that we will not allow anybody to defy the act. If you look further in the act, the amendment, we now want to get the conveyancers, not to transfer units that are unenrolled. The conveyancers have also had it easy, and the laws get them defied. Now, we do not like them to defy them. They must make sure that the properties are enrolled. That is what we are implementing.
Honorable, what did you speak on?
Yes. That's why I'm here. It's been a nice concert, actually, because we've spent every 2 hours doing not what we're supposed to be doing, like Mr. Turner said. My concern is, and whilst I found it very interesting, maybe we should have a workshop on the council and its work and home building in general. But we've been called here because we've got to go and brief our provinces. Because the provinces ultimately have to decide whether to pass this bill or not. And I'm very concerned that if we go to the provinces, I go to Mpumalanga and I start telling them about this amendment bill, and they start asking the questions that the members have been asking the department and the NHBRC, I'm not going to have the answers. So I think we must get back to the amendment, A. And B, my question is, what role has the province got in the effects of these amendments? What is the implications for the department in the province? Because like us, you know, the provinces are a little bit of everything. Portfolio committee only has to concentrate on housing and all those different bodies associated with housing. We've got to know, that's why you get confused about the DGs and the chiefs of the councils. I can understand that. We have in our section, I think, 9 portfolios with all the bodies associated to that. You must remember about 30 people who are heading up these departments. I really don't blame you. But so they have the same situation, maybe not as much as we have, because I know from long way is local government and housing. The question they're going to ask is, how does this impact on us? Now, why do we see so much about minister and so little about MEC? Those are questions that have been asked of me before. So, to sum up my question, what is the impact of this bill on the provinces, and what role do they play? The provincial departments of housing and the portfolio committee on local government and housing in my province. What role do they play in order for me to give them a proper briefing on what they've got to decide and mandate us to vote? I hope you understand my question.
I had a problem with what you were saying. If you say the department or NHBRC should not have said we are solvent, then I have a problem with that. It means there's no transparency. It means information is withheld. And if I'm not informed, I'm walking in the dark. And that's why we are discovering facts now, as if we never interacted with the NHBRC before. This is my worry. And the chairperson cannot say that. You shouldn't have said you are solvent. I have a problem with that statement. Because exactly that you are saying, if it makes us to know how ignorant we are, even as legislators in this country, how do we inform people? How do we popularize what you have, unless it belongs to somebody's pocket? And therefore I have a problem with that. And I would like to know, why was it not mentioned in the past? You know, there are a lot of problems which have to be looked into. And therefore, you did a good thing by saying you are sold and you're walking around with a lot of money. That belongs to the people and not in your pocket, as an HBRC. Chairperson, the satellite offices, I asked that question. I am informed that in my province, the satellite office is in Plateau, which means it's not accessible to the entire province. But lastly, Chairperson, I think we're coming with this lot of questions, deviating from the bill, because we feel there are a lot of things that are supposed to be covered by the bill. And if the NHBRC or the department are saying they have covered space by consulting, we were not consulted. If we were consulted, we were not given all the facts, like today. And therefore, that's why we running around, we feel the bill is there, it's fine, it wants to address certain things. But it's supposed to be addressing a lot of things, unless you're going to come again, we keep on, you know, amending the bill. But if there's a thorough consultation, we bide one bide. And when that piece of legislation goes through, we know it's addressing many things, but not in pieces, bits and pieces. And that's why my understanding why we're deviating from it. It means space has not been created for us really to inhale. And therefore somebody was saying there should be a workshop. Because I believe there are still a lot of sins which have not suffered. Which are souls. And we still have a lot of questions. But obviously we must go and raise the provinces. We must go back to the bill. But that rings the bell that something is wrong somewhere. Something seriously wrong.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. I thought that it is our responsibility. May I be the shepherd? I thought that it is our responsibility to do exactly that, because our understanding is such that we believe that policy by its nature is not static. Policies is there to evolve, because it is informed of material conditions that we will be constantly facing or come across. And as a result, as and when we come across certain challenges and so forth, we will have to adapt policy, we will have to adapt legislation to respond to that. Even if it means that should happen 20 times in a year, but it is our responsibility to do that as legislators. So I think it is important that we must accept that kind of a responsibility. And I take the point that maybe I shouldn't have said that to the LHBRs, they shouldn't have said that they are problems. Notwithstanding the fact that the issue has been taken out of context, that I put it across, but if it is understood out of context, then I think the context in which I put it to LHBRs is such that as a result of that, we then divert it. And it doesn't stop us from calling LHBRC to come and give us a briefing, and a thorough, detailed briefing. A briefing that even reflects on the kind of work that they are doing, province by province. And I still stand by my word, honorable members, and everybody, that sometimes whilst it is important that we raise other issues, we must also be mindful of the kind of decisions that we take. And I know with the Northern Cape, my problem, that the last briefing of the NHBRC, we agreed that the NHBRC will avail itself in provinces. And we, as a committee, we went to the Upington. In Upington, we had NHBRC there, in the Northern Cape. That's what I can say, because I was personally there. But I still maintain that there are challenges, there are still gaps that we need to address. And if we agree in this meeting that there are gaps that we need to address, let's agree, therefore, in principle, that for now, let us deal with the matter related to the bill. And then once having dealt with that issue, then nothing stops us from calling to the NHBRC, and I keep on referring to the minister, because I know that there are also problems there as an organ in terms of the housing industry or the build industry. So maybe this will again be necessary, because we have learned something out of this amendment, that here are these gaps, here are these challenges, that we will definitely need to call these institutions to come and brief us again and take processes from there. Secondly, I thought that, to me, when it comes to the issue of the popularity and the extent to which NHBRC is doing its work amongst our people. This is the first briefing. We don't consider that briefing that we got initially. We even said, I can remember saying in that meeting, that as a result of the non-availability of NHBRC and senior leaders from the department. We are going to allow the presentation, but it's going to be an informal presentation. That is why even after the presentation, we didn't engage you. We appreciated and accepted and attended the meeting. Therefore, this is our first official briefing. And if this is our first official briefing, looking at the cycle, we've got about 6 weeks now. No, no, about 4 weeks. 6 weeks. Which therefore means, as we go back to our provinces, not only are we going to be dealing with issues related to the amendment. When we started the meeting, I appealed to the department, and I think I need to also extend that appeal to NSBRC to be part of the provincial briefing if you've got offices in your provinces and so forth, and avail your officials in the provinces to also assist and encourage, therefore, provinces once more to have public hearings. Because through these public hearings, then more shall our people get to know about this NHPRC. Then more shall our people have a better understanding of what is it that we need to do and the record that we have on any issue that is there. So therefore, I would really appeal that we look at this presentation in that context. And it doesn't stop us, of course, that our provinces can take different positions. And when we consider the mandate from provinces, if your province feels that this bill is interfering with my constitutional rights as an individual, as a home builder, and whatsoever, you've got the right to make that amendment. Nobody stops you from that. What the state legal advisor does, he explains what the constitution says, the balances and all those sorts of things, but nothing stops the province from saying, according to our observation, this thing is in actual fact interfering with my constitutional rights. And on the basis of what the majority of provinces will be saying, therefore we will be able to consider and conclude the bill. And nothing stops this committee, even if we are still not satisfied, to say, not enough has been done. We need to go back, because we know of what is happening now in the country, where even as the NCOP, we've been challenged on a number of legislations that we passed, the health bill now and the other one, where the NCOP, the processes have started again. So we must do things correctly. If our people's views are not considered and we just push things through, this committee, I want to believe, is not going to allow that to happen, because we don't want to find ourselves as a committee in an embarrassing situation. And so I was just appealing to members that let's look at the context in which we receive this presentation, and once we are satisfied with that, then go back to our progress. I think there's one critical area that has been raised by the Honorable Watson relating to the extent to which the provinces find expression in the Constitutional Act or the amendments. I don't know if the Honorable Chairman.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I don't also think you're back, but just in short, in the background, the presentation says that the bill seeks to rectify certain interpretation and implementation problems. When you talk about in the bill about owner builders, it seems to me that we talk about the freedom of choice versus the burden of red tape when you sell it. However, my specific question would be here, what is the danger that makes this amendment consumer friendly?
You shall be the last one.
Thank you, Chair. I said it to the last bite. Just from KwaZulu-Natal, please don't look at this as being a NHRC vaccine exercise. We are just happy to engage that we get clarity. I've got two issues. The one issue was an issue of reasonable time.
you know, we've got opportunities to take it back to our provinces and panel it and bring it back. I think it's open-ended, and when you say the issue of reasonable time, it can mean anything, as you stated earlier. That's the one issue. And the other one was, I will go back to page 5 of the bill, section 8.2, on the issue of roof leaks. I'm just saying this in the context that, you know, here again, you can have definition that will be varied and wide. And in the case of state-subsidized housing, it is too ambiguous. And it will have a bearing, again, on your finances, because how can you say a roof leak is caused by what? By the wind or poor quality or whatever. And in the case of non-state in the formal sector, that will have a bearing on if my roof leaks, my ceiling gets buggered, my carpet gets destroyed, my furniture gets this thing. So I'm just raising that in that context. No, I don't want an answer now, but when we have our bite back at later meetings, we could bring it back to the fore. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, I want to appeal to my colleagues so that we can learn the brief provinces, because I think we don't have briefs, and the province has set our perspective. And one of the expectations is that what does this reasonable time mean?
Yeah.
You know, you don't just sit there and brief and say, no, I don't know, I just brief you. Besides, they want you to say something on this thing. And Chairperson, if you have gone through some of the surveys that have been conducted, and even our people who were in Gauteng recently, and maybe that Honorable Sotet is here, one old woman was saying, I have written this number of letters to the mayor. I have written this number of letters to the MEC. From the mayor's office, I did not even get an acknowledgement of receipt of my letter. No, from the MEC, I got acknowledgement after 3 months. But unfortunately, they said I must bring another copy because the copy that they have is lost. I'm talking about living experiences of our people. And this woman said, I sent a letter to the president's office. Within 48 hours, I got a reply. And the reply was saying, we have acknowledged your letter, we are studying the content. Yeah? Within 5 days, he got what steps have been taken, you know, getting that continuous report. But the point I'm trying to put across is that there is a general confidence of our public cutting across in the ability of our national government, you know, to deal and to be responsive to the, you know, issues of our people. And now, in a lawmaking process, it is quite difficult, particularly if you're not able to categorize the nature of the problem, you know, to say, no, the minister, reasonable time must be in 2 months. What if the issue itself would investigate investigations that is 2 years? I'm just making an example, because we cannot preempt or anticipate, you know, what nature of the issue, because the minister, in my view, in the legislature, is the highest recall in terms of review. When everybody else, you know, the minister must look, why has, you know, maybe any DRC or whoever arrived at this decision, what is the view and argument of, you know, it wasn't easy to check. That's why in a court of law, it's a normal thing. They can hear every argument and say, we will give judgment after 3 months. It is normal, Chairperson. It's reasonable time. Reasonable so that you give a very sufficient and quality response to that. So, I'm saying for me, Chairperson, let's leave it as it is and trust that our minister will be reasonable indeed and will be responsive and will have a sense of agency and purpose in dealing with all the problems. That will be my first take. The second take, I really want us to agree with your summary, but at one point, because whatever you say, Chair, that there was a meeting with NHDRC, it's good, but I'm not a member of this committee, but members of this committee are reflecting that maybe these issues that they are being raised here are not entertained. I'm saying we'll still need interaction. We still need interaction, really, on these issues and whatever. Let's go back to the basic business, the
B, Chef. I want to confirm to your ruling, earlier ruling. Thank you very much.
No, we are definitely there. I'm just asking for this now. We are with the bill now. And in PRC, in principle, later. For now, it's the bill. So the response is the bill. Amanda.
Thank you, Chef. The response, the bill. Written comments were received from 9 housing provinces. So we take it as an NGRC that provinces were exposed today. Roofing, leaking roofs in terms of the main act, 12 months, which means anything, any damage that occurs within the first 12 months, we will feel really. So there is a law that protects the fields. Chair, like you have indicated, I'll not respond to anything that is not the bill. Thank you.
I'm coming to that. Do you have any comments on that? The role of the MECs in provinces?
Sure. I would suggest that the department has been a better position to the practical, for the practical side. Legally, I'm not so sure. I'll have to study that. The principal asked before I can, but
anything from the department? I get the impression on our watching that probably something that was not thought of. But there's nothing that stops the progress today. When you send your mandate, you then reflect on that aspect. That will then allow the department to respond at that given point. So this is how we think the legislation cuts out provinces. There's no clear role and definition of the MEC, especially taking into account that housing is a concurrent function. So the role of the MEC is not there, or it's limited, or whatsoever, the provincial department and so forth. So I mean, it's an issue, and it is also exception to the street. So maybe your province might spark something. But the department is here, they've already got a sense that this is what provinces might have. Yes, sir.
Am I
just
the reason for time on the summit to consumer is spot on. That is the reason that an elected official before the minister, it's not usual to put in a time limit. So a reasonable time, the court has already checked out exactly when what is reasonable and what not. Just the last thing about the person, owner builder, there's nothing prohibiting an owner builder from selling the house. It's just because this bill is aimed, the act, the principle act is aimed at protecting the consumer. The home builder is not the consumer, the person going to buy the house is the consumer, and that person must be protected. So I don't think in an open and a democratic society that is unreasonable to limit your rights to that extent.
No, thank you very much. I just want to say that we shouldn't only limit provinces to issues anticipate and to be conclusive. Even including the issue of reasonability. It shouldn't be a matter of this committee concluded that the national minister is the highest one. You still have an opportunity to engage on this matter. But of course, let us be responsible on how we make the presentation and the extent to which we put it across. Because a counter argument can come to say that yes, but it can be reasonable, but not exceeding the term of office of the minister. That can be an argument. So reasonability can also be argued in that context, that you submit, you appeal the first year of the minister coming into office, and you only get your response after she has left your office, and that response says, I've just entered the office, I'm studying the document, I will respond. So I think it is important that we must also look at it in that context. Honorable members and the officials from the department, NHGRC, I think I must thank you very much. It was quite a robust engagement, and I think that's the kind of no, that's fine. So I think as we agreed in principle that this is the first official briefing. Now this is an opportunity for delegates from the respective provinces, and of course the special delegates in Northern Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape, of course working closely with the permanent delegates to the NCOP to give briefings to the provinces. Like I said once more, let's encourage our provinces to call public hearings. NHBRC, the Department of Housing, have committed themselves. They didn't say maybe, they committed themselves to this committee's on record that they will avail themselves. All we need to do is to ensure that we send our sessions to them in time once more. Please don't call a meeting tomorrow and say, NHBRC, we are having our meeting tomorrow. Can you send someone? Let's organize ourselves in such a manner that everybody has got time to prepare and so forth to go and give a proper briefing to provinces. Except for one thing that I thought I thought maybe one member would pick up on it. That's why I didn't respond to it. That we don't take that excuse from NHBRC to say, no, we thought it's a Section 75, therefore we would not come to the NCOP for a briefing. Whether it's a Section 75 or a Section 76, it is important. Because even if it was a Section 75, once concluded by the portfolio committee, it would still come to us for kind as the select committee. So we would have still wanted the NHBRC to be present when the briefing is given by the department. So maybe that's in future, that don't say no, if the NA has dealt with the matter, there's no point in going to the other house, because these are two houses of parliament, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. Two houses, not the upper house and the lower house, but two equal houses that makes up parliament. And therefore it is important that that aspect, we shouldn't lose it. That if the NA has agreed on something, now that's fine. The NCOP will agree. It's not given. Like you have seen now here, this the kind of robust engagement. We might even expect or experience more robust engagement when we go down during the public hearings and so forth. Because now we'll be speaking to people who are directly affected by these things. And if they feel that, no, this section is not in actual fact, we must remove that section, we must put in this kind of a section that would speak to our interest, because we had agreed in principle here that ours is a pro-poor, it's a pro-consumer approach. We seek to do exactly that, which our people have been suffering for quite some time. Let me thank you very much for your engagement, and maybe before. Ma'am.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the program, NCOP program, and also in terms of the cycle, provinces are supposed to be briefed on Thursday and Friday this week. So I just want to caution the members, and they are already provinces that have indicated that they are going to have those briefings. Thanks.
Yeah, the You would remember that one of our members were from constituencies who were still rustic. So thank you very much for bringing that to my attention. This week will be the briefing. I know my province is tomorrow, Northern Cape. So maybe other provinces is Thursday and Friday, which therefore takes us back to that question that we raised earlier on around the availability of the department and NHDRC to assist provinces that will be having their briefing this week. Now mine is tomorrow. It's fine. We can end it with conversation. Are you also having it tomorrow? Okay.
No, she said to send you on Friday.
On
Friday.
Okay.
But we'll send also the official invitation to both bodies. Okay.
Maybe let's do this. Let's check tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow is Northern Cape. Is there any other problem? Not tomorrow. Let's just confirm tomorrow. Northern Cape. Free State.
That's not free day. I just want to raise a question, man, and maybe we may discuss this at some point. Because one day we were briefing provinces. Members of the department in question went to provinces. And I found that thing to be awkward, clumsy, and unreasonable. Because I was asking, what is the role of the department in the province? Because they should own their own sense of the law evolves at the minimum level, and it goes down. The MEC owns that law, should speak the same language with the minister. And the officials at that level should be of age. You see, I'm not sure, man, whether we are not creating problems. I'm raising this thing because one minister has made a complaint that he won't allow officials, like as well as he is in Tone, that other people are being employed somewhere to do, you know, Minister of Social Development. And I'm convinced with this argument, you see. So I'm saying if they are generous, they can go, but you must be cautious about that.
That is why I was very cautious. I didn't use the word must. I said the operative term that I used was to say we agreed in principle.
Mm.
I didn't say NHDRC and Housing Department must go and prison. Because I avoided using that operative term. Precisely because of that thing that you are raising, Honorable Sutola. And also, I raised this thing on the basis of experience. It's a reality. We all know that even our own provincial department officials will be asking us questions. That is a practical thing. And so is you. You know what? So, I'm appealing. It's an appeal. If you are available, please assist. But Tuve Nisha in particular, you know that you are not...
Tuve Nisha.
I wonder what is going to happen if Tuve Nisha appears before the comments. It seems that I'm no different than... I must vomit. No, it seems that they are in for something when they appear before the committee. I don't know. But let's not speak about it now. But my problem is your satellite, Reverend spoke about satellite offices. So now man, I would really appeal that they must be there. So that they must be there, please. With the department, of course, we can understand. Like the Honorable Stone Affair put it, you know. It might also be difficult for national departments now to be deploying their officials left, right and center throughout the country. But if there is such an opportunity for them to go, I would encourage them to go. But if you look at the briefing itself, it's in the main Tuve Nisha, you know. Okay, if I say Tuve Nisha, let's take it that I'm saying anything. Okay, so did you want to assist us with that?
No, I'm not
saying if we are informed, all our provincial managers would be on site. We just need to be given the date. Secondly, Chair, the issue of 7-6 and 7-5, I was just saying we were not invited. That's the reason we did not come. It's not that we said it's a Section 7 services. We just didn't know there was a meeting. We're informed later. But I'm saying whenever there's going to be a briefing, if we get that communique, our provincial managers and our head office support would be there. So we just need to be invited quickly so that we can be there.
Let's hit the ground running. Let's do this. I want to hit the ground running now. One, provinces that are going to have their briefings tomorrow, Northern Cape, can you note that? No need for letter of invitation. So that when you leave this meeting, you are immediately therefore in a position to inform your province, officials or managers. Tomorrow is Northern Cape. That one I know. Tomorrow, is there any other province? No. Thursday, Western Cape. Yeah.
Chair, can I give the address? It is the...
No,
the time...
Legislature.
12 o'clock.
Okay.
The committee room 2, 12 o'clock, 4th floor.
Yo.
7th Wales Street, Western Cape Provincial Legislature.
Okay. Ref?
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm not sure. Usually the Northwest is on Thursday. It has never been on a Friday. But I'm not sure of the time. That has to be confirmed. But I wanted to say I won't be able to attend because I have a funeral in the family, which I have to attend to. So I would please that the department really, or the NHBRC really, make sure that there's somebody. We tried to pull somebody from the province, but it seems we failed. We tried to pull in Honorable Kolweni. It seems we failed. So I'm the only one coming from the Northwest as we are seated here. So I would please really that somebody is going to brief. And we will make it a point that we communicate the time. It's on Thursday. So,
well, I was not confirmed
yet, sir,
then please contact the
chairperson. The provincial
chair.
Okay. Or even you, in this regard.
Well, I can't tell the province to invite us. They can make contact with the province. Or they can contact the provincial liaison office here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the constituency house.
Constitutional
house. Constituency, you cannot see me, not functioning properly. Okay, that was for Thursday, yeah? And then Friday?
Okay, Bumalanga is not confirmed. Northwest is on Thursday, and the Western Cape. But you have taken note of the problems or challenges addressed by the Northwest. Friday? KwaZulu-Natal? On Kunubnika address.
We initially tried for Thursday, but seemingly there are other political meetings on Thursday. We can't hold it on Thursday. I'm desperately since this morning trying for Friday. They'll come back to me in about 5 minutes because just checking other issues. But I started the process this morning.
But committee, because of Thursday is totally off, so we are definitely on Friday. But we just need to confirm time more. Is it what you are saying?
We'll know in about 5-10 minutes.
Oh, I was trying, my luck. Let us.
Thank you, Chair. KwaZulu-Natal, 9 o'clock Friday, Legislature Building, Long Market Street, Peter Maritzburg. And Chair, can I take leave of you of my delegation and got an early flight back? So after I finish, we will want to take leave. Thank you.
Me too. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. It's Friday at 9 o'clock, and unfortunately, Mr. Abel Chumule, who got a very good relationship with me, the Gauteng provincial manager. Yeah, he knows the place.
Please,
yeah, it's on Friday, Chairperson, at 11 o'clock, Midland Street, Sunland Plaza building,
okay.
Second floor.
Right. Then that brings us to one point, which is the negotiating mandate to be submitted by the 30th, the 30th of ACAN. We should have been receiving negotiating mandates from all fronts. So that 1700 hours. That's the last time. I don't know why we cry about bureaucracy, but we're also very bureaucratic. But nevertheless, thank you very much. It was quite a nice day. Yes, 5 o'clock. Thanks. The meeting is adjourned.
You are invited to lunch.